Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 218 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes. Search Locked On Thunder. You can subscribe to the podcast there. Leave a review once you're on that page. Find us on audioboom.com as well. And you can log on to normantranscript.com, middle of free agency. In case you haven't been following, there's been a decent amount of news going on. So you can follow all the Thunder-related news at normantranscript.com/sports/Thunder Road. That's my blog there, Thunder Road. You can see everything going on with the Thunder over there. I'm on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, but during free agency, like I said, on Friday, and like if you've been following the podcast, you might have seen one on super early Saturday morning. If there's anything big, if there's any real news, I'm going to do emergency podcasts and throw those up. So when the Thunder traded for Paul George on Friday night at like 10 p.m. or 11 p.m., whatever it was, Royce Young and I got together like 3 hours later at 2:30 when we were done writing and done reporting and done finding out what we needed to find out and talking to whomever we had to talk to. And we did an emergency episode on Paul George. More Paul George talk today. I'm leading off with my buddy Anthony Irwin from Locked On Lakers. And then we're also going to be talking about Taj Gibson, who has reportedly signed a two-year, $28 million deal. Shams Charania was the first guy to report that from the Vertical. First up, though, we're talking to Anthony about Paul George. Anthony, how's it going?
I'm doing good. Nice, you know, nothing really going on. I mean, I'm honestly, it sounds facetious, but the Lakers have been insanely quiet this offseason. Like this since free agency started, they said that they weren't going to leak, and it's just been, we've been sitting here on our hands, like wondering, all right, well, what's gonna happen now? But fortunately, because the Lakers get tied back to everything, this Paul George trade is really interesting for everybody out here in Los Angeles as well, and I'm sure everybody out there in Oklahoma City is pretty thrilled to watch, I would argue, one of the more dynamic duos in across the league, right?
Yeah, so that's something I was wondering. I was talking about that with the Podfather, David Locke, and we were wondering, like, where does this rank amongst the best duos in the NBA with Russ and Paul George? So there's obviously LeBron and Kyrie's got to be in there. Stephen Durant's obviously number one. Mm-hmm. And LeBron and Kyrie's got to be there just because it has LeBron. And then you'll have, although I think both Russ and Paul George are better than Kyrie. You've now got Chris Paul and James Harden as someone in the discussion. Mm-hmm. Am I forgetting anybody else?
Well, like basketball Twitter keeps telling me that Ben Simmons and Embiid belong in there. but no, I'd probably put George and Russ, I would put them third, like 2A, kind of with. Yeah.
And you got LeBron Waller. Beal is someone that people are going to say.
Mm-hmm. I'd put those guys ahead of. I'd put George and Rush ahead of those guys, just for the simple fact that both those guys are going to be out to send another message. Like Russell Westbrook's entire season last year was a giant middle finger, basically. Like, watch what I can do. And then I think he's going to try to double down on that this year now that he has a legitimate teammate to really roll off of. And I would imagine – I don't think – he doesn't really give off the vibe. Russell Westbrook doesn't, that he necessarily cares about criticism all that much. But I do think he probably heard a billion times that, you know, well, those stats are great, but another – you know, it was a first-round exit and they didn't – necessarily scrape into the playoffs, but I believe they were the seventh seed, right? So I'm sure he heard enough throughout the entire year that, like, well, what would he do if he had a teammate? Would those numbers still be there? Can he do those numbers, or can he put out that production on a winning team? So I'm sure this year it's going to be really fun to watch him and Paul George figure things out on the role. And I would imagine Russ is going to go out of his way to really immerse Paul George in the Oklahoma City culture, because he needs to. He needs to stick around long term for this to really work out.
Right. Well, one of the things that this organization had to do, and I talked about this with Royce a little bit. Royce and I did that emergency podcast. And if you want to listen to like the raw analysis of like just after learning it happened, you can head on to wherever you listen to Locked On Thunder, and you can listen to that there. That's my plug for my stuff.
Was it pretty much just like, wow? Like, honestly, if it was my job to analyze that trade right after the fact, I would have just said wow about 37 different times.
There were a lot of wows at the beginning. I think we got a little bit more analytical near the end, although we were also slightly delirious because it was literally like 3 in the morning when we finished. So, and we had been working all day. And like in my case, I had been on a flight to Orlando and had been working, and there was just a lot of chaos happening in both of our lives for the previous like 12 hours. And I think that probably came through by the time it was 3 a.m. But yeah, I think if there was one thing the organization had to do this offseason, it had to put Russell Westbrook in a position to where he didn't have to play the same way that he did this past season. And I don't think that, like, Russ didn't necessarily play this way because he was put in the position to where he had to play this way. That's not necessarily something I believe. Like, he has always wanted to play this way. It's in his basketball DNA to want to play this way. He tried to play this way when he was playing next to Kevin Durant. He just couldn't play to this extreme when he was next to Kevin Durant because Kevin Durant was there. And you couldn't necessarily justify it, or Kevin Durant would just end up holding onto the ball or whatever it was. But you couldn't do that with Kevin Durant there. And I don't think you can necessarily do it with Paul George there. But just taking off the pressure from Russ to at least make him think that he doesn't have to play that way, even if he didn't actually have to play that way, to convince him that he doesn't have to play that way because he's with, I don't know, what's Paul George? Top 12 player probably?
I'd call it, 12 or 13.
Yeah, you've got him as a top 12-ish, certainly a top 15 player probably. Then it just makes things mentally easier for him. I mean, forget the physical toll. It just makes things mentally easier for him, I think.
Yeah, I would say, because like last year it was always crazy to me that on some random like Tuesday night in Milwaukee, Russ would just go off and still have. I mean, I can't recall his numbers from the one time they played in Milwaukee last year, but it was insane to me that like every single night in, night out, he was willing to put his body on the line to get the numbers that he was. And I agree that I think, you know, I don't think he's going to average a triple double next year again, but I, you know, the idea that on those nights that he does get a triple double, because I the record that they had last year when he got triple doubles was really good, right? Like that was one of those weird narratives that was going around the NBA that he was doing that and they were empty stats, which it's such a haterific take, but I think this year when he gets those triple doubles and to go with that, if Paul George has even a, you know, average night, that's a win. That's an automatic win for the Oklahoma City Thunder, almost regardless of who they're playing. And I think George complements Russ's game almost perfectly with how well he could play off ball. He's a great cutter. He's a great spot up shooter. He's really good at attacking the, because he's such a great spot up shooter, they have to close out hard at him, and he's really good at attacking that. So you're going to see like this really fun dynamic between those two guys. And by the way, Paul George helps Russell Westbrook defensively on the perimeter, which is this weird thing that like I'd like Russ to be better at it, but it's hard to ask for more from Russ. And I just think George plugs in a bunch of gaps that really the Thunder desperately needed last year. It's kind of too bad that Oladipo didn't turn out to be more of that. But when you know basically turn Victor Oladipo into Paul George and Sabonis is kind of a tough to give up kind of player too. But when you turn those two guys into a top 13 player, that's a great way to go back to Russ and say, look, we're committed to keeping you around and maintaining competitiveness throughout the entirety of your next contract. That was the major goal here, right? That had to have been.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it definitely did. And we'll see. So that can bring us into why we specifically are doing a podcast about Paul George. Why would anybody who covers the Lakers do a podcast about Paul George if the trade was between Indiana and Oklahoma City?
Well, There was this, I don't know if you heard all this, but, you know, I guess the Lakers and Paul George have been linked a couple times this offseason. I don't know if you picked up on those stories at all, but yeah, I'd say the Laker fans, look, I tweeted out after the fact, and I don't mean this as a slight to Oklahoma City, but of all the non-Lakers trade situations, this, like, as a Laker fan, I can't help but feel like this is a pretty good one if you're hoping for the Lakers to be able to have a chance at Paul George next year in free agency. As great as those two guys are, and they're phenomenal, I think Oklahoma City is a top. I would imagine they'll be contending for home court by the time the playoffs roll around. They'll be in that like four spot is my kind of guess. But that still, like, for Paul George, is that the type of title contention that he might have had in, say, Cleveland, or he might have had in, say, Boston if Danny Ainge ever ponied up? I would say for Laker fans, we have to be sitting here right now and saying, all right, yeah, they might have a chance, even after Paul George has what should be a pretty fun season in Oklahoma City, to get this guy after the fact. Am I crazy there? Am I being a homer, or what do you think?
No, I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. I think much of the league believes that Paul George is going to the Lakers. And you know why people tend to believe that? This is not a Kevin Durant to DC thing. It's not a Russ to the Lakers thing. People believe that because he tells everyone. he's just telling everyone he wants to go to the Lakers. So who knows what's going to happen this year? I think the Thunder, the worst case scenario if you're a Lakers fan is if Indiana just says screw it and holds on to him. The best case scenario if you're a Lakers fan is if Indiana just says screw it and holds on to him, and then he's like, what are you doing? And leaves. I think the Thunder will have a better chance to hold on to him than Indiana did. Because first of all, if Indiana couldn't do it in, you know, the number of years that Paul George was there, they're not going to be able to do it in one. And the Thunder will still be able to give him, like, the Thunder will presumably, Indiana's coming off a 42-win season. And next year, they weren't going to be much better. This year, this Thunder team, they're still putting it together. Gibson's gone. That was expected. They maybe could use a power forward. Maybe. I think Jeremy Grant is probably not ready for that. They could probably use another shooter or two. They could certainly use a backup point guard. I think these are all things they're working on and they're possibly trying to go out and get. Obviously, they're talking to Rudy Gay as well. So I don't think this roster is complete, and I don't think we can talk about it. But I think it's fair to guess that a team with that twosome at the front and some other good talent there, I think Steven Adams is going to have a good year and such. Like, I think, like you said, I think it's fair to say this team is going to win 50. And if you're coming off a 50-win season and you don't have – the difference is, like, people say you need more time to convince a guy to stay. And maybe this is my homerific take. But if you – people say you need – you know, oh, you want the time to convince a guy to stay. Sometimes the time works against you. Sometimes the more time that you have to convince the guy to stay, all he sees is that he doesn't want to stay. Sometimes the full season where everything just happens to go well, let's say everything magically goes well this season. Russ has an incredible year. George has the best year of his career, which is totally possible. He's like basically entered his prime last year and had arguably the best year of his career this past season. So it's totally possible he could have the best year of his career this year. I don't see why not, playing alongside the best player he's ever played against. And they're going to use him for more efficient shot opportunities. And he might be able to go harder on defense because of that and all those things. So let's say he has the best year. The Thunder win 50 some odd games. They have a nice playoff run. And he realizes how much he likes it there. Now, I'm not saying that this is all the absolute best case scenario for what happens with the Thunder. But I kind of think that it's one of those scenarios where because of, you know, Oklahoma City is not like Los Angeles. I don't think anybody is going to disagree with me on that point. And it's one of those scenarios where I think having the less time to convince him might actually be more advantageous than having more time, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, like it's easier to make that decision when you're still in the honeymoon phase, basically.
Yes, you know? You just said what I was going to say in a way more concise way.
Well, I think there's a lot to that. And I think if you're – let's say Chicago was the team that picked up Paul George, right? And it's a big market, and it's a lot of the same things that he'd be maybe hoping for by coming out here to Los Angeles, that, you know, it's close enough that maybe you can get him to buy in on, hey, if like Los Angeles is a 10, we're like an 8.5. Whereas like Oklahoma City, I've never been out there, but you know, the thinking that I kind of have is where it's like it's more quaint. You have more of a down home feel to it, you know, and it's different enough that he might say, you know what, this is kind of nice. These fans out here, Oklahoma City's fans, like I would still argue are some of the best in the entire league. So like, I think there's a really good chance that after a 50 win season, and let's say that, you know, they get to the second round and they go up against, the Warriors, and they contend against the Warriors, and he kind of buys into being a part of that rivalry that's kind of built because Kevin Durant went out to Golden State, then yeah, like at the end of that year, I could totally see him saying, hey, this was a lot of fun, and looking at Los Angeles and saying, wait, you guys are how far from that? You know, and that's what I would be hoping for if I was an OKC fan. But, you know, again, like for me as a Lakers guy, and if this guy's mind has already been made up, I think he's a good enough dude to really give it a go out there in Oklahoma City. But the day, I think it was the exact day that he was being traded, earlier that day, he was being told, or he was reportedly telling, I think it was via Tanya Ganguly of the Times, that his friends were telling people throughout the league that he's still coming to Los Angeles. So like, there's this weird relationship juxtaposition between the two stories and the way this all could turn out. I think it's probably the most interesting story going into the year, right? Like, I don't, off the top of my head, I can't think of a storyline that could have a larger impact on the league as next year's free agency comes to pass, other than LeBron and Dan Gilbert, like, openly hating each other. Other than that, like, I think Paul George and how he likes it in OKC is going to be a huge storyline for next year. Also, I mean, because indirectly, it's going to affect how LeBron feels about LA, because those rumors have been floated out there as well. And I'm not one to really believe that. I'll believe that when I see it. But if Paul George doesn't like it in OKC and he comes out to Los Angeles and Dan Gilbert annoys LeBron enough that LeBron and George say they want to team up, then, you know, maybe. I still don't believe it, because that's exactly what got the Lakers into trouble in the first place.
Yeah, and I mean, Paul George as well, just to add on, like how much Paul George likes OKC also very well may directly affect Russell Westbrook's chances of staying.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, now I'm not saying Russ is not going to extend, because I don't know if he will or if he won't. I think the organization is, if you made the organization guess if he was going to stay or not going to stay, I think they think there's a better chance he's going to stay or not. But I also get the sense that there's a lot more measuredness when guessing if Russ is going to stay than there was for Kevin Durant. I think they still very much remember how they felt when they thought Kevin Durant was staying, until a week or two before they were certain Kevin Durant was staying. And I think because of that, they're playing this in a lot more measured fashion than they were with Durant. And I don't think they want to get burned that same sort of way, you know? And I think it's possible Russ signs an extension this summer, and this might be a moot point after if he does sign the extension, it would be a moot point. But if Russell Westbrook doesn't sign the extension and they're going to the risk, and Russ says, all right, let's see how this works. And if this works and we're good, I'm happy here and I want to be here. So if I can be on a good team here, then there's no reason for me to go elsewhere. And if it works, even if Paul George, I don't even know if it's contingent on Paul George stays, so Russ stays. I think it's just, if it works, then it just gives you so much more of a chance at keeping Russ. If it works, especially with them possibly going into the tax, showing him that they're going to spend, small market team that's not necessarily a championship contender, because how many teams are when the Warriors exist? There's probably one championship contender in the entire NBA, unless you maybe want to say Cleveland, just because you have the respect for LeBron, which is fine. But small market team that's not a championship contender, does not pay the tax, and if they end up paying the tax and they went out and made a big move and gets Paul George, all of those things can add up to Russ too. And if Russ doesn't want to stay in Oklahoma City, I mean, that's a bigger deal than George not staying in Oklahoma City. Not only because he's a better player than Paul George and this is his team, but it would be another guy leaving Oklahoma City, you know, and Paul George is, you know, he doesn't have the ties to Oklahoma City. There wouldn't be that sort of Russ leaving, KD leaving, LeBron leaving. Like, those are all sort of along the same category, you know, if Russ were to end up doing it. And Paul George, I think, would be in a different category. You don't have the narrative on top of the talent, and I think Russ would have him trumped in both of those. But Paul George, how this ends up could, depending on whether Westbrook or not signs the extension this summer, it could end up having an effect on what his decision would be. And it's just so many ripples.
Yeah. Honestly, I was going through while you were talking, I was trying to go through all of the different scenarios here. And it's like that GIF from The Hangover where Alan is playing blackjack and you have all these numbers kind of floating in front of my face. I can't even try to keep up with all the different ways that this all could turn out. I was surprised, though. I wanted to touch on the Russell Westbrook thing a little bit longer. I was surprised that we didn't hear more. Like, Ramona went out of her way to say, because I think Shelburne was the one who reported the initial Paul George trade.
Right.
She went out of her way to say that this doesn't necessarily affect Russell's interest in signing that Supermax deal. He's eligible to sign it right now, right? If they offered it to him, they could offer it to him, right?
They have offered it to him.
Yeah, and I was surprised that was something that she went out of her way to report. Is there anything that you can add to that, that like – Am I reading too far into that? That wasn't news almost right away. Because for me, if I was Russell Westbrook and I just got Paul George, I would want to show the commitment to the organization to maybe convince Paul George to stick around.
Yeah, I mean, the impression that I've got is he wants to see how it works, and I don't know if he is 100% certain right now that he wants to be back. Now, like I said, I think there's a greater than 50% chance he ends up coming back. Mm-hmm. But I'm not totally sold on it. I mean, it's certainly plausible that he ends up going elsewhere. I think the difference here is that the Thunder, who aren't 100% sure either if he's going to end up signing that extension or if he's going to end up re-signing next year, it's just an interesting heel turn for an organization that almost always plays it cautiously. I kind of thought if trading for Sam Presti was such an would be – or say, trading for Sam Presti. Trading for Paul George would be such an un-Sam Presti-like move. I kind of thought if Westbrook showed that he didn't want to extend them right away, they're just going to start shopping him. And what they did was they got rid of a contract in Oladipo's that they weren't too excited to have. And they kind of – regret is the wrong word in giving out that deal, because I don't think they regret it. Because you know what? If they don't extend Victor Oladipo, then they don't make the Paul George trade. So
yeah.
There's a good lesson inside this trade, by the way. Extend your rookies. It almost always works out for you.
Especially like rookie contracts are gold. Like I don't understand. Like Ben McLemore is going to be this kind of couldn't you see Ben McLemore kind of going to, I don't know, San Antonio, revitalizing his career, and then Sacramento looking like the Kangs all over again? Like these rookie contracts are pretty easy to
control. You're describing what people thought about Ray McCallum right now.
Yeah. I guess that's true, and he kind of disappeared, so that's fair. So I wanted to, in terms of the basketball, we kind of alluded to, we think that the Thunder could win 50 games. Is that enough? Is 50 games enough to have him stick around? Or are the Thunder done dealing? Because this is kind of turned into a Thunder podcast, but frankly, the Lakers haven't done anything, so like all the Lakers can really do is kind of sit around and watch what other teams are doing. But for the Thunder, I saw Rudy Gay is kind of connected to the Thunder, and you know, if you guys want a semi worn and torn Luol Deng, you guys are more than welcome to take that off the Lakers' hands. But is this enough? Do you think with the talent on the basketball court right now? To convince Paul, all right, we're going in the right direction. We're going to be able to put a title contender around you in the next 4 years of how long he would extend.
I don't think they're done. There's going to be more. I think they're going to get a backup point guard at least. They're interested in Rudy Gay. It's a little complicated with Rudy Gay just because I've heard his market is in like the 10 to 12 million a year range. And obviously he's coming off the Achilles injury, but the Thunder don't have that to give out. I mean, they don't have that room. They would have to convince him to take the mid-level exception or lower than that. So I don't know if someone's going to do that to come to the Thunder. Guys historically who have been good players have not taken less money to come back to the Thunder or to come to the Thunder when they've never actually played there. It's just never happened before. It would be literally the first time a player had done that. Maybe with Paul George and Russell Westbrook, they'd want to after the season Westbrook had. Maybe somebody says, I want to play with that guy. wouldn't be absolutely shocking. It would just be the first time it happened. So I'm not necessarily predicting that it ends up happening, but they're interesting. Like with Gibson gone, it's possible they go out and get another four. But now, like, because they always had big bigs this past year, but now they're kind of going smaller. Now their bigs are Cantor and Adams, and then they've got Grant as a small four and like McDermott as a small four. They don't really have like a bigger four who can defend it all because Cantor plays the four, but he's not going to defend there at all. So they could end up making a move there. They could end up maybe bringing in another shooter or something like that. Gay is obviously a possibility. He visited in Oklahoma City before Ennis decided to break the news that he was there. Did you see that tweet?
I did not.
Oh my gosh. Cantor tweeted out yesterday. The way that everyone found out that Rudy Gay was visiting in Oklahoma City was Cantor goes into the locker room, sees next to Russell Westbrook's locker is like a plaque that's up on the locker. The locker next to Russell Westbrook's has been empty all season because Russ likes his space, so the locker's empty. For Rudy Gay's visit, they made up a plaque of like what his locker would look like, and they put a plaque that said Rudy Gay on it, and they just put it in the empty locker next to where Russ's locker is in the locker room. And Cantor went in there, and he took a photo of it, and then tweeted it out with sources tell Ennis Cantor, and then shocked face emoji. And everyone's like, oh my gosh, did they sign Rudy Gay? And all the Thunder reporters are like hitting up their sources, and like I'm calling people, and like, did they sign Rudy Gay? What is Cantor talking about? Like, I'm figuring it out. And then I finally find out, like, no, they did not sign Rudy Gay. Ennis is just a total goofball and thought it would be hilarious to tweet that out. He's just in Oklahoma City on a visit. And that was a prop. That was a prop, that locker, for the visit. And Cantor is just a total goofball.
I love the idea of, like, somebody, you know, they have the Players Tribune. So like Derek Jeter reaches out to Cantor and says, all right, so what you need to learn here is you need to give some journalism tips.
And Kevin Durant is deputy editor of Players Tribune.
Yeah. So that's all that needs to happen right now is somebody to give Cantor some tips on how best to, the best practices on reporting stories. And then you don't have to worry about that again. No, I think if you had to bet one way or the other, and this is kind of how I'll wrap up. If you had to bet one way or the other with how this all plays out, George or Westbrook, both three up in Oklahoma City, one of those guys are gone or both of them are gone.
I don't know. I think the chances of Paul George staying are pretty low. So either, I guess I'll say that Russ stays and George goes, but I don't know. Who knows? Like I honestly haven't had the time to be able to find out yet how much Paul George swings Westbrook in either direction. You know?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of in the dark on that. Like I can guess from what I knew before, but the situation is so much different than what it was before. I haven't gotten enough word. I mean, Russ is so private. Good for him. He's super private. He doesn't want people poking around his business. And I think honestly, people mostly respect that. And people don't find out this stuff. And so I don't know how much Paul George changes Westbrook. I don't. I don't think he's going to extend like today or tomorrow. But maybe I'm wrong on that too. You know, I didn't think they were going to get Paul George, and then look at what they did. I mean, this like you talked about how the Lakers aren't leaking. The Thunder just never leak anything. If things leak, it's almost always from another organization. If something involves them or from an agent or anything along those lines, like it doesn't really ever come from them. They just don't really tell anybody anything. So. It's hard to say what Russell Westbrook's thinking because you have one of the most private organizations matched up with one of the most private superstars, and that's like a super team of privacy.
what's Superman's lair or whatever whatever solace, like that's basically what's going on there between those two guys. I my last question here, I forgot, I wanted to ask you this. Was this a gamble on Oklahoma City's part? Did they make this trade knowing, you know, or leaning one way or the other that Paul George would probably not re-up? you know, was because it does kind of kill two birds with one stone. If you're rebuilding, you don't necessarily want Victor Oladipo's contract on the books if George leaves, and then, you know, you have to play out for the hypothetical that Russ leaves too. So was this one of those gambles that they make and say, look, we really tried Russ and he didn't re-up? Or was this something like, all right, if he doesn't re-up, we're hitting the ground running when it comes to this rebuild?
I think it was both. I think it was planning for multiple scenarios. And it was, well, if both of them leave, then you got cap room. You're going to have a good draft pick. You know, they've traded draft picks, but they're all at least top 14 protected. So, you know, they'll be able to get those. And the one that's going to now Orlando is in 2020 is top 20 protected, but it just rolls over immediately into 2 second rounders. So if they're not good, they're in a rebuild, like they'll hold on to that pick, and a first rounder will never even convey. So I think it's kind of planning for both. I think if it works out, I don't think they necessarily made the trade with any sort of expectation that, like, oh, Paul George is going to come here and he's going to love it and he's going to stay. I don't think that's necessarily the expectation. I think they're going to work their asses off to try to make sure that that's what does happen, but I don't know if that's what the expectation is. And if they both leave, I think they're in an okay position for a rebuild with one of the best drafting GMs really ever. I mean, some of the draft picks that he's got the best drafting run of any GM ever, and that 2007 through 2009 draft run, when in 07 he took Durant, 08 he took Westbrook and Ibaka, and 09 he took Harden, which is, honestly, I'm not using hyperbole, probably the greatest draft run of all time. So yeah,
it's definitely up there.
Yeah, so there's just – I think they're in a better position today than they were, not that long ago. And I think it was a move that, you know, Russ wanted help, and I think Paul George constitutes his help. And
I'd say so.
And if Russ were going to leave before with the big Oladipo contract, the big Adams contract, which I actually think is a good contract still because it's less than a max, which is what he would have gotten in free agency this summer if he were to hit it, I think they would have been in a worse position if they already had all that salary on their books with some other free agents. And now they're going to have more flexibility in 2018 either way. And I think that's always a good thing.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I think it was a great move. Not just it's really rare that a move that can be perceived as a gamble is actually a long-term rebuild play as well. Like, that's pretty rare that somebody can pull that off. It's pretty incredible. That was a great job by those guys.
Yeah, well, Tim McMahon tweeted out that an exec texted him. I'll paraphrase it because I don't remember the exact wording, but that it was the best salary dump possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it was. I mean, they saved $4 million. They saved 4 years on Oladipo's contract, and they bring in one of the best players in the league.
I mean, look, this is not apples to apples. This is definitely apples to oranges. But like with the Lakers salary dump, they had to get rid of arguably their best young player to get rid of Timofey Mozgov's deal. Now, obviously, the reason this isn't apples to apples is because Victor Oladipo is immensely more valuable moving forward than Timofey Mozgov is going to be. But it's still, like, it just goes to show that in essentially what could be seen as a salary dump, they got 1 year of a top 13 player in the NBA. Like, I think that's really impressive.
I'm with you.
All right. Well, this was a lot of fun. This was, are you going to be in Vegas?
Yes, I will be in Vegas. I'm getting there on the 7th.
I'll be there on the 9th. I have a wedding on Saturday night, and they didn't want to move it to Vegas. I was kind of bummed.
Who does weddings during Summer League? That's so rude.
It's the worst, right?
So rude.
All right, man. Well, thanks. Thanks again for, you know, answering my DMs and best of luck. I'm really, I can't wait to watch this. What's their best five? Like, I guess they need another move, but it's Russ, shooting guard X. I guess it'd be Robertson.
They're probably bringing back Robertson. I think there's a very good chance they bring back Robertson. Unless somebody makes him just some obscene offer in restricted free agency, which is becoming less and less likely as teams lose cap space. I still think it's possible that maybe Brooklyn misses out on everybody and they offer him a crazy amount of money. But unless somebody offers him just a ridiculous number, which is way above what the Thunder have him at, I think the Thunder are committed to re-signing him.
Yeah, I would imagine so too. So you have Russ, Robertson, George.
Probably Grant at the four, and then Steven Adams. It's going to be a good defensive starting five.
Yeah, definitely. And I'd actually like to see if the Thunder could somehow swing, you know, if like Rudy Gay is the player there, then you have kind of both of those guys play like the pseudo 3-4 position that's become really popular in the NBA. But if the Thunder could somehow get another athletic wing and then be able to try to convince George to play the four in big moments, then that's a really fun team.
Or you bring Gay off the bench and have him run your bench lineups, and he's like your go-to mm-hmm. bench guy, and you're not necessarily as forced to stagger so strictly if that's something that Russ or Paul George doesn't want to do, because some superstars don't like doing that. So mm-hmm. that's a possibility also. But we'll see if Rudy Gay actually comes. I'm not 100% sure that that's going to end up happening.
Well, I'll have to pay extra attention to Enes Kanter's timeline.
he's the go-to guy now.
All right, man. Well, I'll talk to you soon. It sounds like I'll see you in Vegas.
Yeah, I'll see you there. Not done with the podcast just yet. Going to be moving on to a conversation with Sean Hyken of Locked On Bulls, talking about Taj Gibson signing with the Timberwolves. Obviously, Taj has that Chicago connection. But before we get to Sean, I just want to take a quick second to talk about SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show you want to go to, and none of those older ticket sites want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. SeatGeek is always the first place I go to look for tickets to a game or concert. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I just used it the other day to look at tickets for shows and stuff going on in Vegas while I'm there for Summer League next week. Everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports and music fans. SeatGeek does all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. SeatGeek does all the work, and you save the time and money. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, enter the promo code LO Thunder, that's LO like locked on, and SeatGeek is going to give you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LO Thunder today. Quick break, and then let's talk to Sean about Taj Gibson.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So I'm here with Sean Hyken of Locked On Bulls. We could have done this with like a Locked On Timberwolves or something like that, but I figure why not get the two guys who have actually covered Taj to talk about. Taj Gibson reportedly signed a two-year, $28 million deal with the Minnesota Timberwolves earlier on Sunday.
It's not reportedly. His agency tweeted it out. It's one of those ones where his agency, I think, tweeted it out before.
Oh, was it really? I thought it was Shams who reported it.
Well, like Shams was the first reporter that had it, but then it was like I saw a tweet that was from like Priority Sports that was congratulations to Taj Gibson on getting so we don't have to say reportedly anymore because his agent officially announced it.
Well, there we go. So Taj Gibson unreportedly, just truthfully, signed a two-year, $28 million deal. Well, the 2-for-28 is reportedly. Or I shouldn't even say signed. I should say he agreed to sign because we're still in the moratorium. Anyway, the Thunder expected Taj Gibson to go. No one really expected him to be around. Even at the time of the trade, that was considered a rental because of the financial position the team is in. They'd still like to re-sign Andre Robertson. They've got about $108 million on the books after making the Paul George trade, and that doesn't include Terrence Ferguson, who's yet to sign his first-round deal. And for all we know, that's not going to happen for a little bit because Rich Paul is his agent. And Rich Paul holds out, and there seem to be some contract disagreements there because he's not playing Summer League right now. So either way, let's assume he takes $1.5 million-ish because he can only take within a small range of that. That brings you to $109.5 million, and all of a sudden you're within $10 million of the luxury tax, and you still got to re-sign Robertson. That's why Taj Gibson's no longer around. But, Sean, this is a good fit for Gibson, right? Like, it makes perfect sense.
It does. I think this is a good deal for him and for the Timberwolves. Because, I mean, as soon as this news broke this morning, you kind of heard all the jokes about, oh, Tom Thibodeau is just getting all of his guys back. Taj Gibson is still, I mean, this is not, you know, him giving Joakim Noah the contract that he got last summer, or Luol Deng the contract that he got last summer. Taj Gibson is still good. He's still a productive player. He's going to be great for that locker room. He was the single most beloved teammate that anybody in Chicago had in the last, what was he there here for, 8 years? Like, he is every, I have never heard a person in my entire life say a bad thing about Taj Gibson. I've never heard of anybody who has met him or has played with him or has coached him or who has been in the organization that employed him that hasn't liked him. He's just – this is like – and I was telling this off air. This is like – I was on the Locked on Hornets podcast briefly yesterday to talk about Michael Carter-Williams, who they just agreed to a one-year deal with. And I was trying so hard to be – you know, find positive things to say about it. I was like, well, you know, there are no bad one-year deals. It's worth taking a flyer, but he's also not that good. Taj Gibson is like – I love everything about this deal. I know he and Tibbs have a huge mutual respect for each other, so I'm happy that they're back together. I know he and Jimmy are tight, so I'm happy for Jimmy that, you know, he didn't want this trade, but now he gets another friend of his from his Chicago days to be with him. Taj gets paid. He made $7, $8, $9 million a year on his last contract. Now he's making 14, even if it's only for 2 years. Like, I'm happy for I think this worked out great for everybody.
Yeah, and the thing about Taj, so Taj had two real priorities. He wanted a basketball fit, but he wanted to get paid.
Yeah.
Like he took less than market value with his last contract to help out Chicago. And he's 31 years old, and this is really his last chance to go out and go get a big contract. He probably is not going to have an opportunity this good to get this big of a contract before, and he wanted that contract. That's why coming back to Oklahoma City, who was pushed up against the tax, and in order to have to give him money, was going to have to give him money plus whatever tax dollars came on top of it. It was just going to be tough for them when they're in a situation where they're already probably going to have to pay their tax regardless. Going into it even further was just probably not a possibility for someone like Taj, who for them is more of a luxury than a necessity with kind of the other pieces that they have. This makes a lot of sense. I mean, there were I don't know if you heard him, Sean, but there were a lot of rumblings, and I tweeted this. Well, actually, I was talking about this with Snotty Drippin, who then tweeted it on my behalf a couple of days ago. There were a lot of rumblings that Taj could be a guy who could end up in Minnesota. He's got the great relationship with Tibbs. Minnesota kind of wants – they thought they were a little bit too young last year, and they want that locker room presence. And Taj is like the ultimate locker room guy. Like one of the reasons the Thunder made the trade for Gibson, even though he was only there for – knowing that in all likelihood he was only going to be there for 25 games plus a playoff run. The reason they made that deal is because they thought, A, he could obviously help them on the court because they needed some more talent around Russell Westbrook. But they also thought that he could have like some locker room effects that could last far beyond whenever he was there. They kind of thought, all right, well, he'll teach Jeremy Grant stuff. He'll teach Sabonis stuff. Obviously, Sabonis is gone now. But they teach Grant stuff, Sabonis, even the non-big guys, the Alex Abrines of the world, whether it's just work ethic stuff or whether it's certain little tricks about the league or how to conduct yourself as a pro or anything along those lines, because the Thunder had one of the youngest teams in the league. And that was something they really, really valued in him coming over, as well as just somebody who can really be able to help on the court as well. And I think, you know, maybe we'll see. Those are things that you don't really see. But maybe we'll learn if that's true. If, you know, you talk to Alex Abrines and they're like, well, you know, Taj taught me this last year. And there's sort of those effects of Taj still potentially around. And I'm sure it had to be the same in Chicago, right?
Yeah, Taj is just the ultimate pro.
He's a culture setter too.
In like every single respect. He's a total company man. He fought as hard as anybody for Thibodeau when it kind of became clear that the front office was on the outs with him and he was going to get fired. He fought for him in exit meetings. And he was also, over the last couple of years when Fred Hoiberg came in and he was kind of not popular among some of the veteran teammates and also among, you know, he was just kind of getting killed in all directions. Taj came out and defended Hoiberg every single night. He'll never throw a teammate under the bus publicly. Like during the whole Instagram thing last January with Rondo, Wade, and Butler doing all, you know, talking about all the teammates. He came out and said like he wanted to avoid the drama. He was great with that. For his entire career, for most of his career, he's been good enough to start, but he's come off the bench and never complained once about it. He plays through injuries. He can play. He plays both ends of the floor. I mean, his offensive game isn't super diverse. He doesn't have shooting range, but he can score around the basket. He's kind of developed a consistent mid-range shot over the last couple of years. Like, every single team in the league, and I've said this for a couple of years, like even going back to like when, you know, he was in trade rumors for several years, all 30 teams in the league are going to be better for having Taj Gibson on their team than not having Taj Gibson on their team, both on and off the court. He does that, you know, I hate to use like the intangible cliches or he does the little things. He does. He's a guy who, you know, teammates love him. Fans love him. Coaches love him. He never complains about his role. Every single thing about him just checks all the boxes. And especially for a team like the Timberwolves, where, you know, they, the last couple of years, they've kind of been in the same position that the Thunder maybe were in like 2008, 2009, the first couple of Durant Westbrook years, when they weren't good yet, but they had all this young talent and they wanted to get, you know, take that next step. And, you know, they brought in Kendrick Perkins in 2011, they made that trade. And, you know, he was just huge for, even though, you know, maybe he was past his prime from a basketball standpoint by that point, he was just huge for their culture. And he just kind of helped them get to the next level. And he's just a pro, and he became close with all their stars. And I just think Taj is going to have this same effect, because, I mean, they traded for Jimmy Butler a couple weeks ago. So now, like, you know, okay, now they're ready to not just be this young up and coming team. Now they're ready to make the playoffs. Now, Taj is the kind of guy you sign when you're ready to win right now and you want to set a culture and you want to do something that's going to be sustainable in the long term.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I agree. I think it's a culture move. Like, their bigs aren't really three-point shooters. I mean, Towns is the best three-point shooter on that team of all the
bigs. What is he, like 35%?
I think it was 37 this year, which is really good, but you don't want to turn Karl-Anthony Towns into a 7 threes-a-game guy. I mean, that's not – you don't want to turn him into a stretch big. That's not the best way to use him. The fact that he makes threes is incredible, but you want there are so many other things where he's just so dominant that you want him doing – you want him doing other things, and in order to maximize Towns, regardless, it would be nice to have a guy next to him who could space. But that being said, I don't think Minnesota is necessarily done. They could potentially trade like a Gorgui Dieng, especially after making this deal, and maybe they could get something else for someone like him, because he's a good player. He's a good contributor. So I wonder what the rest of their roster is going to be. The West is so good.
That's the thing, because like I
so good.
And I mean, that it's crazy. Like, and you know, the Timberwolves, with all these moves they made, they just added Jimmy Butler, who's an all NBA guy, and they added Jeff Teague, who I think, you know, is probably, just because he's a better shooter than Rubio, I think he's going to be an upgrade for them. I don't know if he's a better player in a vacuum, but I think he makes more sense for them than Rubio did. And now you upgrade your starting power forward with Taj Gibson. They still might be a 7 seed. The Thunder just traded for Paul George. They still might be like a 6 or 7 seed. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, the West is so good. We'll see what happens with Gordon Hayward. That's obviously going to swing the Jazz big time, seeing what happens with Hayward. But Utah,
right, but you
like,
still got, like, I mean, now that Golden State had got Iguodala and Livingston back, so they're going to keep basically their whole group together. Whether they re-sign JaVale, I think, might affect whether they are title contenders or miss the playoffs. But, like, you know, Golden State's up there. San Antonio is still going to be really good. I really like the P.J. Tucker signing for Houston, and then obviously Chris Paul, too. Like, Houston's going to be up there. You know, Utah, if they keep Hayward, is going to be really good. I think the Clippers are still a playoff team, even though they lost Chris Paul. You know, they've got Blake back. They still got DeAndre for another year. I think Patrick Beverley, like, he's obviously a downgrade from Chris Paul, but he is a very capable starting point guard. Lou Williams, I think, was a good pickup in that trade, another kind of offensive guy. He's not as good of a shooter as Redick, but he can replace Redick kind of in that role, I guess, as just like a guy who can make a shot. And so, like, they're still going to be good. Memphis is still going to be good. Like, Denver, if they get Millsap, which it seems like is pretty, you know, reasonably, you know, likely to happen with their guys, like, they're going to be good. Like, it's actually, like, I was thinking about this yesterday, because, like, you kind of heard that Phoenix was in the running for Millsap at some point, and then they pulled out of it. And I mean, that's just smart, because it's going to be so hard to make the playoffs in the West the next couple of years.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. It's going to be so tough. And, like, man, like, Utah won 51 games last year, but everyone was hurt. And now all of a sudden, like, let's say they have a year where those guys are healthy and Hayward comes back. Like, that's a 55-win team. The Thunder, if they fill out their roster with a couple more good pieces, that's potentially a 55-win team. I don't see why not. Houston could be that. The Spurs could obviously be that. Golden State obviously would be that. Like, it's amazing how, I mean, Minnesota is going to be extremely good. I agree with you. I think the Clippers will still be competitive as long as Blake is able to play, you know, a decent number of games. I think they'll still be competitive. Like, there's a lot going on in the Western Conference right now. Like, Memphis is still going to be competitive. There are a lot of good teams out there. It's really tough. I feel like, you know who might be screwed? New Orleans might be screwed.
Portland, too.
Yeah, Portland, too.
Because Portland is still, like, the last couple of years, Portland is, I mean, they've been decent. They've been pretty good. And obviously, they've got two all-star caliber players in Lillard and McCollum, and then they've got Nurkic now. But, like, they just might not have enough just because the West is so loaded.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. You got anything else to add on Taj before we wrap up?
Taj is the best, and I'm really happy that he landed in a good situation. And Minnesota fans are going – he's going to be most Timberwolves fans' favorite player by the end of the season. I can just tell you that right now. He is maybe the most universally liked sports figure in the last 20 years in Chicago. Like, nobody has a single bad thing to say about him. Everybody likes him. He's just the best guy, and I'm really happy for him.
So you mentioned he's a company man.
Yeah.
I'll leave it on this story. Taj Gibson knew he was leaving the Thunder. The Thunder knew Taj Gibson was leaving them.
Uh-huh.
And he still schlepped all the way to a pain in the ass award show to go support Russ for MVP.
Yeah, he did. That's a story. Yeah, he's just because, and I'm sure it's because he really likes Russ and cares about Russ that much, and Russ cares about him. Like, his teammates, I've never talked to a single player who's ever played with Taj that he isn't one of their favorite guys.
Yeah, now everyone in Oklahoma City, I think, felt the same way, although they didn't have the opportunity to get to know him quite as well, obviously.
I'll say, here's a story about Taj from the very end of his, because that trade came down, the Taj-Cameron Payne trade basically came down right to the deadline, and so we were all at the Advocates Center waiting for the trade deadline, and so Taj left because he thought he, you know, as soon as he found out he was getting traded, he was like leaving and he was hugging people or whatever. And then he drove to the airport because he thought he was just going to have to fly to Oklahoma City. And then he found out that the Thunder were sending a private plane for him that wasn't going to get there until later. And so he drove all the way back to the practice facility so that he could talk to us like at a media scrum. And then he went back to the airport to get picked up in the Thunder's private plane.
Yeah, that is something. Okay, so before we go, I need to tell you one thing and I want to hear your quick reaction to it.
Okay.
The last time I had a Yankee fan on this podcast was Jared Dubin, and we talked about Aaron Judge for like 10 minutes. I don't need to talk about Aaron Judge for 10 minutes, but I just do want to tell you, Aaron Judge is now officially 5 wins above replacement. No one else in Major League Baseball is 4. Give me your quick reaction.
Can we talk about Clint Frazier? A home run and a double in his debut yesterday, and then he just drew a walk today in his first at bat. Like, and they still got Torres coming up at some point. Like, this is the first time the Yankees have actually been fun since that 09 team.
It's great. It's really fun.
I love
it. All right. Before we go, you remember I'm on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Like I've said before, if there's anything big that happens, I'm going to do emergency podcasts, that kind of stuff. But Monday, Wednesday, Friday are the scheduled episodes. And then, like, obviously, like, I had the Paul George episode with Royce on early Saturday morning that I posted. Anything else big, you know, obviously Russ signs extension, there will be a podcast shortly after the follow. Anything like that, you can head to iTunes, though. Subscribe to Locked On Thunder there. Questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. Find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FredKatz. Sean, what's your handle again?
At Hyken, HIGHKIN. You check out Locked On Bulls. Leave that some 5-star reviews on iTunes. Subscribe to The Athletic to read my work. And check out Locked On Bulls.
Great. And you can check out normantranscript.com/sports/Thunder Road. That's my blog there, Thunder Road. Follow all team coverage and see what's next for the Thunder. So that
the name
do
of your
today.
Blog is a fandom that we both share, too.
Yes, that's true. That is true. But, like, that's just because we're sports writers.
That's true. I saw Tom Petty at Wrigley Field the other night.
He's so good live.
He's incredible. That was my first time seeing him. But I think I saw 4 or 5 different sports writers there just that I bumped into that I didn't even know were going to be there.
Yeah, Tom Petty and Bruce are two guys who, like, every sports writer likes.
Yes.
It's very good.
Well, Tom Petty might just be the most universally agreed on person. Like, I've never met a single person. Tom Petty's like the Taj Gibson of music. Like, he's an ultimate pro. I've never met a single person that doesn't like Tom Petty. Like, even if, like, you're not, like, a huge fan, you at least be like, oh, he's got some good songs. I just came up with that off the top of my head, by the way.
I'd hope so. I hope that's not a thing you've thought about.
No, it's not. It's absolutely not a thing I've thought about.
All right, well, that's a good note to end on. That'll do it for today. Until Wednesday, maybe sooner if something crazy happens. Locked On Thunder is locking up.